Good morning. Welcome to the beginning of Earth Week. With the sunshine and the rain, the landscape awakens from its winter slumber. I feel such joy to share this chapel time with you and to enable it to be co-led by students in the pilot Environmental Conversations program. Today, you will hear from first-year students Allison Bender, Julia Pilkington, Katie Noel, Kendra Klentz, and Sophie Moss, as well as support from the front row of folks in my section of first-year writing. The Environmental Conversation exists as a series of linked courses organized around the broad ideas of the coupled human-nature system and sustainability. The student group explored land, food, and justice in the Bible, and a broad swath of environmental concepts in an Introduction to Environmental Studies January term course. They have jumped into co-curricular experiences. All live in Kittlesby Hall, which allows them to participate in the Hillebolt Green Hall programming. Earlier this year, the team participated in a river cleanup, work on CSA farms, volunteering at the Northfield Climate Summit, and a discussion and screening of environmental films. This semester, we practice the art of learning through reading and writing about nature's mysteries, with an emphasis on our own backyard. A vast array of opportunities avail themselves to you this week as we celebrate the Earth in the backyard I call St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota. From this evening's reading about the end of night with Paul Bogard, to a sustainability fair, to Thursday evening's presentation by LaDonna Redman talking about the intersection of food, justice, and democracy. Today, I cannot resist the opportunity to note that Earth Week begins with Easter, and Earth Day falls on the last day of Passover. The imagery of these events ring as church bells peal in my head. God delivers his chosen people and extends to all creation his unending love through the death and resurrection of his Son. How does each one of us hear this call to express our love for one another and for all creation? In their book, The Upcycle, authors Michael Brungardt and William McDonough pose the question this way. How do we love all children of all species for all time? These questions bring back a flood of memories of Earth Week's past when our late colleague Jim Farrell and the campus ecology class created an annual Earth Week chapel offering. In those moments, they frequently shared stories of hope, hope for their own lives and for the lives of all living creatures, big and small. Never underestimate a choice you make today and how it manifests itself in community today and tomorrow. 25 years ago, I shared a plot of land southwest of Hoyme Hall with students, faculty, and staff. Our mission? To transplant sugar maples from Hoyme Woods. Those young saplings have now matured into the sugar bush we all enjoy today, and one that is starting to yield sap for transformation into maple syrup. Its story continues to evolve. It reminds us of our interdependence on the earth and all biota, and lifts up the power of seemingly small actions. We invite you into our conversations through this chapel service, and we hope that the engagement continues in the weeks and months ahead, so that in every day, we recognize the earth and express God's love for all children of all species for all time.
The reading for today is from Psalm 104, verse 10 through 18. He makes springs pour water into the ravines. It flows between the mountains. They give water to all the beasts of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. The birds of the sky nest by the waters. They sing among the branches. He waters the mountains from his upper chambers. The land is satisfied by the fruit of his work. He makes grass grow for the cattle and plants for the people to cultivate, bringing forth food from the earth, wine that gladdens human hearts, and oil to make their faces shine, and bread that sustains their hearts. The trees of the Lord are well watered, the cedars of Lebanon that he planted. There the birds make their nests. The stork has its home in the junipers. The high mountains belong to the wild goats, and the crags are a refuge for the hyrax.
The following is a reflection of the three classes that comprise the environmental conversation: Food and Justice in the Bible, Environmental Studies 137, and Writing with an Environmental Focus, and the journey that they have all taken us on. These are some key points and lessons that I have drawn away from the experience and the lasting effect that it has had on me. Progression of awareness, the environmental conversation. The edge of the snow has receded away, curling upon itself in preparation for a muddy surge. The icy coast retreats, forgotten cluster by forgotten cluster, where a gritty beach of salt and ground-up rock separate it from the edges of a stone wall. All crevices of the rock now hold a shivering puddle that glances at the crow's caw. They spill over into whispering waterfalls that bathe the sediment-ridden sidewalk with fresh lakes. These lakes glide aimlessly from earth to sky and to earth's resign. No dam or hydraulic dream chokes their daughter rivers. The currents cease to creak as their murky sisters, who are controlled by the human hammer and blade. And yet these clamoring rivers do exist, once raging, now induced into the cursed sleeping spell of 100 years. In their slumber, the waves wash their tips against the parched desert trails that still recall the way to the Sea of Cortez. To those awake, however, only the whisper of the sea's saline mourning relays any evidence that the water once wandered here. Instead, it wanders to the forest of citrus fragrances that burst with sunlight, the entangled vines that trill bubbles of purple and green, tied down only by gravity, who beseeches them to stay. And yet, their graceful beauty includes a stiff price to pay. For every glistening strawberry glistens the back of a worker, perhaps foreign, perhaps local. In the shadow slithers the mystery of their lives. Who are they? What violence could befall them if the harvest spoils from intoxication by implemented luxuries? The pulpy juice that squirts from the unheedingly knocked askew tomatoes leaves the store floor slippery, and the cheeks of the laborers a sheet of ice. These shadows follow the seedlings from orchards where justice cries out bereaved to the originally tempted hands of Eve. The scenes of history, and they all present arms with coping mechanisms for war, philosophies, since only one victor can emerge as correct. The Deuteronomic viewers camp out behind the confessional as the tragic viewers march forward, believing that there's no reason behind their loss or victory. Yet if they each left their habits of searching the answer in the stars, they would find themselves mightier together than apart. Instead, the philosophers slice their selfish swords away when, in fact, to the natural world, the winner means less than an ant in the shaded wood. He and the bee can gather, seek, and construct, fractal by fractal, the microcosm of their own universe. Ones of topaz honeycombed towers, whose blueprints are pollinated onto the architect's design by the artist's hand. The upcycle, a process for which the violet can still kiss the sky without bleeding into a fabric's dye. It sprints in glittering optimism, shrugging off limits or boundaries. Boundaries such as an empty position, a leadership to be awarded, the responsibility that tapped my shoulder as I watched an interim presentation, extending its hand towards me with the riddle of, why not? To shake the hand meant to release a future I once defined my path by. To hold on would be to forever wonder where my writing could have taken me. So the theater lights clicked off in exchange for the sunlight that heats my notebook, encouraging a life as a solar panel. So long as the ink and graphite twirled into the tales of those who cannot tell their own, changes one mind, then this curve in the path banked true. But for this moment, the ice shelf has already receded from when I last wrote. Its edges serpentines in uncertainly rigid curves, as though invisible waves have left their mark in air. As puddles leak into walkways, the drowned grass is free to live again. The clock will strike 11, and no ice will remain. But the rain will continue its dripping tune in 3/4 time. and this kaleidoscope of life will be forever ruled by an involving rhyme, this progressing realization of mine.
This is a reflection on a significant moment that we have experienced during our time in environmental conversations. On a Friday afternoon, after Intro to Environmental Studies, two friends and I decided to take a walk through the natural lands. The day was unusually warm for what has been an unusually cold winter. Outside Regents, the sky was filled with enormous, sticky flakes. Falling slowly, we attempted to catch them with our hands and tongues. Seemingly impossible to miss, they were somehow able to dodge my attempts at catching them and made their way to the ground.
It is always so quiet when it snows. I've never been able to determine if it causes a calm in the soul or if the snow has some sound dampening quality. Everything stops briefly while gentle white flakes fill in the gray of the street. Voices become softer and thoughts become louder, and it is easy for people to notice things they had not before. Those things they see with their eyes, but also those revelations they find within themselves. Even the boisterous are silenced. The weather's power is deep thought producing and sleep inducing, especially when snow falls in large flakes just before the hush at the beginning of night. It is this soft world of sleepy colors that my friends and I find ourselves in.
We walked on. By the time we reached the edges of the lands, the snow had subsided, a pleasant feeling in the air left wafting in its wake. We made our way to the windmill, to the art barn, through a short path lined with pine trees that were coated in fresh snow. This moment on that January day made me appreciate environmental conversations, what it teaches me, the perspectives it offers me. Already, in our first few months here at St. Olaf, we have been introduced to a plethora of information that has enriched our minds and taught us so much about the environment, as well as relationships between people and the environment. We have been blessed with knowledge and conversation, opportunities. The greatest of all things NCON has taught me is a deeper appreciation for nature, especially its cycles and functions, which encompass me.
I am small but inextricably bound to nature and her communities, giving my existence more meaning than it would have if I were completely solitary and individual. I feel like part of nature. The cold that wraps around me lulls me into her. Her embrace is ancient, powerful, and secret. Humans are animals, and we have the balancing, soothing capabilities of all other organisms. Nature heals, contains, and stubbornly preserves life. Nature is the vital thing that keeps it all moving, progressing, then checked with the falling of millions of tiny cycles.
Although Leopold's work strives to connect human life and living to the land, we share an excerpt from The Land Ethic published in a Sand County Almanac. A land ethic simply enlarges the boundaries of the community to include soils, waters, plants, and animals, or collectively, the land. This sounds simple. Do we not already sing our love for an obligation to the land of the free and the home of the brave? Yes, but just what and whom do we love? Certainly not the soil, which we are sending helter-skelter downriver. Certainly not the waters, which we assume have no function except to turn turbines, float barges, and carry off sewage. Certainly not the plants of which we exterminate the whole communities without batting an eye. Certainly not the animals, of which we have already extirpated many of the largest and most beautiful species. A land ethic, of course, cannot prevent the alteration, management, and use of these resources, but it does affirm their right to continued existence, and at least in spots, their continued existence in a natural state. In short, a land ethic changes the role of Homo sapiens from conqueror of the land, community to plain member and citizen of it. It implies respect for his fellow members and also respect for the community as such.
May our God, creator and sustainer, bless and keep you this day and always. Amen.